From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist, and this is the show where we deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means a balance in body, mind, and spirit. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? Now, before we get into today's show, I want to acknowledge my sponsor, the Rainbow Mobile Notary Service. And we all know that as a nation, we recently witnessed the unfortunate events and circumstances surrounding the Terri Schiavo case. Each day, hundreds of individuals face difficult life-altering decisions and are not properly prepared. Don't let this happen to you. Let Rainbow Mobile Notary Services help. We all tend to avoid stressful emotional, physical, and financial charged issues to convince ourselves it's never going to happen to me. For your own peace of mind and for the well-being of those you love, don't wait or procrastinate. Let Rainbow Mobile Notary Services assist you with living wills, trust, estate planning, medical power of attorneys, and much more. Plan now. Prevent problems later. You can call Rainbow Mobile Notary Services at 480-518-2090. That's 480-518-2090. Or visit them at their website, www.rainbowprof.com. That's rainbowprof, P-R-O-F as in professional, .com. Now, they will set up an appointment and come to you, whether it's home, office, or even a hospital room, to take care of these very important papers that most of us put off doing. So rather than leaving pain and suffering for those that have to take care of our decisions, especially under medical situations, because we didn't take the time to deal with this, don't do that to your loved ones. Take care of it. Let Charles King come and help get these forms notarized and made legal so that everything's in place and you can take your mind off it and relax and do whatever healing work you need to do. So I want to thank them for their support to my show. And doing that is a very wise thing to do, and that's actually the topic of today's show, finding the wise one in us all. And I'll be introducing my guest in just a minute or two, but I want to start by reading something from a book called The Power of Wisdom by Aman Matwan. And he actually, a lot of the stuff I was going to say on my own, he puts it very well as an introduction here. Most of us are not aware that we don't see the world as it really is. We assume we do. But we actually see what is easy to see or what we want to see, or what we think others want us to see. Inevitably, we build our life on a foundation of false assumptions. We attack symptoms rather than solve the underlying problems. And when our solutions don't stick, we are quick to blame the world around us. Change how you see the world and your whole world will change. Look at things as they really are and you will see your problems, challenges, and opportunities in a completely new light. You will discover from within a foundation of clarity, creativity, and insight that you never knew you had. Although you may not realize that you have already seen the world as it really is. As newborn children, we gazed upon the world with complete innocence and without the internal dialogue that contaminates our perceptions today. As we grow older, many of us come full circle and once again see the world as it really is. With age, we give up the struggle to control. We reconcile ourselves to seeing things the way they are. This is conventionally known as gaining wisdom. But you don't need age or experience to gain wisdom. You can see the world as it is starting today. Open your eyes, observe nature. Everything from a blade of grass to an erupting volcano gives us a vital clue to the way things are. What nature teaches is basic and fundamental to life. It is the key to thriving and surviving with everything. Relationships, parenting, leadership, team building, stress reduction, entrepreneurship, strategy setting, and waking up your inner creativity. Even the world's great religions at their core emulate nature's teachings because nature's truths are impossible to deny. Wisdom. Wisdom's the topic of the show. And just as Matwani just said, it's something that I say on the show always, that there is an inner truth in all of us. We're born with it. It's something innate. And as we are raised, we are contaminated with judgments and criticisms and defense mechanisms and belief systems and all that stuff that just interfere with what we already know. And that's really where the author and lecturer Hal Milton goes to with his book, Wising Up, Life Without Regrets. Now, if you remember back in May, Hal was a guest on the show, and I so enjoyed talking with him and the places we went with this that even then I said, I want you back on the show, and he was ready, willing, and able, and here he is. Hal Milton, you there? Hal?
Hello?
Hello, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, were you able to hear all that?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
It was a great introduction from the book, Power of Wisdom. It's so right on.
Well, definitely so, and that's basically your book is right on, because as we said on the show last time the focus was really on elders and aging and using the wisdom to really ground ourselves and what it means to pass it on in a society. There's an English proverb that I found in another book that says, wise late, old soon.
Right.
Wise soon, old late. And again, that says in very simple terms everything that I believe is in your book. You define wisdom as knowledge plus experience.
Yes.
Am I right about that?
Yes, actually, that's the first part of it. I think that that it's the reflection on the experience that really brings wisdom to consciousness.
Okay, so explain that a little bit more.
Okay, it's like we have different experiences, and we learn from experiences, and those experiences many times get buried from our consciousness. We just don't pay attention to them. And so my premise is that it's only when we reflect on the experiences of our life and we reflect on those that we can bring that wisdom forward into our consciousness so that we can use it in a conscious way.
Okay. In the section that you have on the 12...
Well,
it's called Quiet. The section I'm about to read is called Quieting the Mind, the Wisdom of Meditation.
Uh-huh.
On page 146,
uh-huh.
I think this is an expansion of what you're just saying, and I like the way you put it. We become more aware and conscious by listening to our hunches, our intuition, even the occasional or chronic pain in the neck or back or stomach, as well as the deep aches of our souls. We pay attention to our dreams and wonder about the tears that come for seemingly no reason at all. We discover in retrospect that we have learned something about ourselves when our careers, our marriages, our health, hopes, and dreams came apart. Our miserable experiences turned out to have value when our perspectives on these events changed. Just like umpires, we make the calls of our experiences. We can choose to call them in ways that depress us, or in ways that lift us. Our perspectives determine our happiness. We might ask ourselves, what kind of self-talk am I using? We have the opportunity to use our wisdom and judgment to choose a perspective that is worthwhile, healthy, helpful, and healing, positive, and peacemaking. When we make these choices consciously, we bring balance, harmony, and wisdom into balancing both our heads and our hearts.
Absolutely.
That, yeah, well, it's beautifully written and just definitely a clear extension of what you were saying.
Yes.
To me, wisdom is reconnecting with that inner voice, our intuitive voice, mm-hmm. and learning how to pay more attention and trust it and act on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your book says pretty much the same thing.
Yes.
How did you get to that place in your own life?
Wow.
Okay, I know.
lots of inner work, lots of therapy, looking at how I got to be the way I was, and it doesn't come easily because it takes courage, I believe, to look at the fabric that has been developed and how we live. And lots of times, for me personally, there was pain going. I went through a divorce and had to leave my children, which was very painful to me. And it brought me into actually counseling and into therapy. And as I looked at some of those areas that caused the difficulty, I found that they were patterns within me. And so as I learned about me more clearly, I was able to kind of move beyond the patterns and develop more patterns that I select consciously, the way I want to live. In other words, many of my decisions were made for the wrong reasons, and I wanted to be able to make decisions for the right reasons.
Right. Now, what's the describe the difference between what a wrong reason looks like, what a right reason looks like?
Well, the wrong reason is, I believe, from lots of conditioning that I gained or that people gained from a very early age. They learn to want to be accepted by their parents, want to do the right thing, want to do the good thing.
Basically, motivated by needing to feel safe.
Safe and accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all need that. And as a child, as a youngster, even more so. And many of us, all of us, take this kind of conditioning and these kinds of patterns into our adult years. And we are operating on learnings that we learned as a child, and we take them into our adult life.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we are making decisions from those perceptions rather than from our adult perceptions and our adult experiences. We mm-hmm. act on automatic pilot, so to speak. And so until we get to look at that, we continue to act that way. Once we reflect on those things, then we can choose a different way of being, and then we are in control of our lives, and there are much less regrets as we get older of things that we may have done earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense, or did I get too
wordy? It makes total sense to me, of course. And so basically what you're saying is you started on a journey of introspection,
yes.
Therapy being a part of that. I'm sure that, and I know from your book there were many others, like, you know, Rolfing body work and meditation and other things like that.
Exactly. Once you start, the universe brings things to you that will help in your process.
Mm-hmm. In other words, when the student's ready, the teacher will
appear.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. So, what about the flip side of it? Making decisions from the right place or the right mind, where does that come in and what does that look like?
Well, it comes over time, Stuart. I mean, you can make decisions impulsively. And impulse is good if you've thought about it before. If you've thought about things before, it starts changing the wiring inside.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you become conscious or begin to start your conscious journey, those impulses are much more accurate. They're not coming from a place of childhood or a place of pain from earlier time, that safe place you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
they're coming from a more mature place, a place that's been thought through, even though you haven't thought through the specific incident that's happening right now. You learn to trust yourself more. You know thyself has been, Socrates said that, hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like learning to know yourself. How do you learn to know yourself?
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy process. It's simple, and it sounds simple, but it's not an easy process. You must go inside and investigate and explore.
Even when it's uncomfortable, which usually it is.
Even when it's uncomfortable. And if you don't do it, what happens is there's some event in life that will come along and kind of force you to take a look at it. And if you are, again, willing, then it becomes very conscious and becomes really a growth issue for yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's like you were saying, listening to the body. I mean, sometimes yes. the body is giving you an ache because you're a little tense and you need to pay attention to it. If you don't pay attention to it, the next thing you know, you're getting migraines or ulcers or heart attacks or things like that. Or you're so distracted by the aches and pains, you get into car accidents and speeding tickets. So the inner voice is always speaking to us, and it's our choice whether we're going to pay attention to it
right.
or whether it's going to have to scream at us before we do.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
You know, let's talk about intuition and that inner voice for a moment.
Okay.
And I want to remind my listeners, this is a live call-in show. If you're out there in the Phoenix area and want to call and ask a question or give you 2 cents here, the number is 480-949-1310, 480-949-1310. And if you're listening via the Internet outside the Phoenix area, feel free to call in. It's the same number, 480-949-1310. Now, the inner voice. I have a quote here from Ralph Waldo Emerson that says, "When we have arrived at the question, the answer is already near."
Exactly.
And again, you know, it's like there's nothing new in the world. Everything is just old, new again.
Exactly.
which is another old proverb. Talk about the inner voice. I mean, most of us, I think, are afraid of that inner voice. We think it's going to misguide us, or we've been taught not to trust it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a place that we talked about where it was a pure voice. It was innocence. It was that newborn.
Right.
And we don't have to learn how to be wise. We just need to get back in touch with the wisdom that's already there, and that's that inner voice.
Exactly.
But
Excuse me, Stuart.
No, please.
Yeah, we've been so conditioned out of paying attention to ourselves in many ways and to that inner voice, and that's part of what we were talking about a bit earlier. We're so conditioned to think that everybody else knows and we don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's when we go to the doctor knows and I don't. We go to the lawyer knows and I don't. My mother knows and I don't. My father knows and I don't. That's what we were raised with, you know, that with as a child. And many of those, that feeling we take into our adulthood in other areas, we transfer it. We transfer those feelings that we have of not knowing, and we transfer it into all situations in our life, or most situations in our life. So when something comes up, or an inner voice comes up, it's, I don't know, or you block it off. You don't even want to listen to it. Or if you listen to it, you think, well, I don't know, you know, and you go into kind of a conflict, a push-pull conflict inside. And I honestly think that the way through this is by doing just what we're doing. It's reflection on our lives and reflection on how we got to be the way we are. And that takes doing some kind of some life review, as some people call it.
Mm-hmm.
Where you go back and look at the patterns in your life and trace them back as to where they might have come from. And just the process of that teaches us.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have to get an answer. The process of doing it teaches us to be more conscious in our life, in our present-day life.
Mm-hmm. And when we do that, I mean, it's something I talk about on the show a lot because I'm a therapist and we talk about therapy. And like we said just a few minutes ago, it's often a very uncomfortable process.
Yes.
But the thing to remember is soon after starting it, you're going to start having some wins.
Yes.
And they're going to feel good.
Yes.
Change to most of us is a scary thing until it becomes something exciting.
Yes, yes. And it does. I mean, it becomes an adventure. It
mm-hmm.
really becomes an adventure, and it's very, very exciting. And it is nothing to be afraid of. Once you get into it, it becomes like a joyful tool.
Mm-hmm.
But getting into it is sometimes fearful for many folks.
Now, what do you say to a person who's in an environment, you know, say a kid whose parents really are not encouraging that kind of growth, in fact, reinforce the negative, and yet, I mean, my parents didn't reinforce the negative in me, but I knew even as a kid, I had that connection. I mean, and there are many kids out there that are the same way, and sometimes the adults actually can look at a child and see the wisdom in them.
Absolutely.
But what do you say to that kid or even the adult that knows and has a knowingness that it's in there, but not the support around them to take these steps on their own?
Yeah, well, it depends on the age of the child, you know,
mm-hmm.
because the child is tied to the parents for, you know, a good many years.
Mm-hmm.
And many children know their wisdom. They know that, and they don't get sidetracked easily.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they do get older and do have the voice for themselves, they follow it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just patience a lot of times. It's unfortunate that many parents don't see this in the raising of their children. That's one of my pets. I really support doing therapy or doing counseling or working with parents, particularly of small children, so they don't carry this thread of patterns, giving that onto their children, that they
mm-hmm.
clear up them themselves so they don't have to pass this negativity or pass this these patterns onto their kids. Is that
mm-hmm.
Is that clear?
Well, it's definitely clear to me,
and also
to those parents that are out there that are feeling that they don't want to repress this stuff in their kids but don't really know how to stop themselves.
Yes.
It's important that they speak their own truth to themselves and say, you know, I want to raise a more conscious individual here,
right.
Which means I need to get more conscious.
Exactly. To thine own self be true.
Mm-hmm.
And willing to just really look at ourselves as adults. And this is, you know, at any age, I mean, it's just looking at yourself. Once you become aware that there's something there, then you can start the process.
Mm-hmm.
Stuart, you have a guest calling in from California. Her name is Cameron.
Okay, Cameron, you there? Cameron, you're on?
Yes.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi. I was listening to the talk show.
Okay.
And I was just wanting to respond to Hal Milton's... you know what he's talking about?
Oh, please.
I work in a psychiatric unit, and I mm-hmm. come across a lot of people with these kind of problems,
mm-hmm.
you know, that have things happen in their lives. And Hal was saying that you know, therapy is one way that he worked through it. And I was wondering how that could help these kind of patients. I mean, is that the only way to find... to have the kind of support you need to make the right choices in your life? Does that make sense? Because a lot of these people don't have access to therapy,
mm-hmm.
and they're just kind of closed to it, you know? They don't think it works, and I think what I heard in the interview is that it's a process and it takes a while. But how does somebody get motivated to do that? I guess it's an inner thing.
Hal, you want to take that?
Well, sure. I mean, I think this is not only a situation that goes on with mental patients in a hospital, but I think that goes on with everyone. And yeah, what is it? What is the key that turns somebody on to wanting to explore themselves? You know, who knows what that is? If Cameron works in a hospital, it might be something that she says to them that will get them wondering about how they got to be that way, or what that particular circumstances was that put them there. If they're conscious that way, if they're willing to look at it. But, who knows what motivates a person to do the inner exploration? Mm-hmm. There's something that happens. It could be that time in the hospital, how they got there, that might motivate them to look at their lives differently.
Right.
Or it may be something that you do or the way you treat them that's different than the other staff members are treating them that may make them feel safe enough that just through your actions of kindness in a way that maybe some of the other staff aren't showing, that you're the one that makes that difference, that help turns on that light.
Right.
Now where in California are you?
Santa Barbara.
Okay. Yeah. Now, when I was in graduate school a long time ago, in the 70s, I was going to graduate school full-time at night and working full-time at a state psychiatric hospital in New York City called Creedmoor. It was a time of, in a sense, snake pit type of wards.
Right.
And they weren't used to someone like myself who I think wasn't burnt out yet and coming in. And it was things as simple that looked like we were treating them as children by giving them crayons and paper to do. But I remember a few times with just what we called art therapy and having a conversation about a drawing that this very simplistic drawing that someone was doing really started a dialogue that they were not having anywhere else.
Oh, right. Yeah, we do a lot of that kind of work on our unit.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a lot of my own experiences, so I've had a lot of therapy as well. So I believe in what Hal is saying, too. So I do bring that to the unit where I work.
Good.
Because I really believe that therapy is one way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm finding that a lot of these patients, they don't have those kind of, they don't have, ways of getting therapy. And they don't have the motivation, to really stick to it. I think maybe they need way more support, too. I think support plays a role, too.
Well, the thing is to meet every individual client or patient where they're at and develop a treatment plan, as you know, based on what their immediate needs are and how to lay a foundation for the higher enlightenment that is yet to come.
Yes.
I think that's the important thing. Cameron,
so I guess I'm doing all right.
it sounds like it. And the very fact that you're questioning what you're doing means that you're probably a bit more conscious than a lot of staff members in place like that.
No, I know. It's a different kind of atmosphere working
Definitely.
With the staff,
Well, thanks for listening to the show.
Well, you're welcome. I enjoy it. I've listened to it before, and I'm really enjoying what Hal has said, and what he is saying.
Well,
I really believe that. And I bought his book, too, so you could tell him that.
Well, you just did.
Okay. Is he listening in?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Cameron.
Okay. Thank you. I'll talk to you next time.
Okay, good.
That was great.
I know. It's like, I think the point that I made was really important. No matter who we're dealing with at any time, we have to meet them at where they are.
They are, sure.
Otherwise, they're feeling judged and criticized because they're not good enough.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, the hope is that, that folks, when they hear about even my book or other books like it, that there'll be enough of a seed there that will get them to want to look at it and read it and maybe even follow some of the steps in it and to just experience that and see what it's like for them, see where it leads them. And the hope is that folks are motivated to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, even for children, I mean, and depending on the level of functioning of a psychiatric patient who's inpatient, you know, depending on, you know, really where they're at, there are some amazing children's books that are actually addressing these issues.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Some amazing things that you wouldn't have seen on the market 20 years ago that are really laying these foundations and giving parents tools at bedtime to read to their children.
Right. Boy, you just said the key word of just laying the foundations for them. It's great. And where does it come from? It comes from our parents or for our caregivers. They're the ones that need to lay the foundations. And even what your last caller, you know, in the hospital, she can lay foundations, as you said, by being nice, being loving, just laying the foundation that there's another way of being.
You know, and again, it's stepping out of the prejudgments.
Yeah.
You know, I know that when I went to work there as a graduate student, you know, a lot of the staff, it was a state hospital. They had state jobs. They'd been there, some of them a lot longer than some of the patients, although some of the patients, even in the 70s, had been in there for 20 and 30 years already and without any hope of getting out of there. And,
right.
And the staff started developing a preconceived notion of what these patients were capable of.
Yes.
And the staff was amazed when I went in and started some different groups, because that's why they put me in there. And at first they were real hesitant and resistant, and then what started happening, the staff started getting rejuvenated on their own job.
Isn't that great?
And the next thing I know, they were coming up with ideas and bringing in different art stuff. And, you know, it was an amazing thing to watch where actually the staff, you know, became allies in the whole process, and at first they were real resistant to it.
Exactly.
The same thing happens in families, I think.
It does snowball, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So
I want to talk about, again, intuition, intuitive listening.
Uh-huh.
You talked in the book a number of times about, in a sense, getting a flash or a hit.
Yes.
And I know that's happened a lot in my own life, and there was a time when they scared me.
Yes.
So talk about, because I think everyone can relate to it, you know.
Well, I mean, I think we all get flashes or that intuition you're talking about. We just don't listen to it. We don't pay attention to it. And I think we need to build up some success levels with it. I think we need to listen. I mean, first of all, be aware that something is coming through all the time. Something is coming through. And we need to act on it. And we may lose. We may, it may not work one time. But you start being able to differentiate. It's part of the, you know, what meditation is about, too. We start learning to be quiet and to listen. And as we make those choices of following up on that flash or whatever it was that came through that was strong for us, and we get a little success, we follow it and we win with it, then the next time it's easier for us to follow it. So we learn to trust ourselves more and more by the experience. And again, it's the reflection, it's doing it in a conscious way and not just operating off the seat of our pants. Many people operate off the seat of their pants and they just do it, and they're not conscious, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but they're not getting the benefit or the joy from making those conscious choices.
Right. And in your book, you said rather than simply waiting for this spontaneous flash, we are invited to explore our inner world, to give attention to thoughts, actions, feelings, coincidences, hunches, or impulses if we are to gain confidence in our inner wisdom.
Exactly.
And, you know,
that says
exactly
it much better than I just said it.
Well, it came from you to begin with. So the issue here really being is most of us will resist working with those flashes because we're afraid of the failure, the damage it may do, what other people are going to think, even though there is a really strong belief that we're supposed to do this. You know, when I used to live in South Florida until 1986, and I was there for 11 years. I owned a house. I had a thriving practice. I was on boards of directors. I had an incredible network of friends.
Uh-huh.
And yet, I came out to L.A. for a conference. I was in the airport. I got off the plane. I wasn't even out of the airport yet when this wave went through my body. And this was before a lot of my spiritual journey was taking place. I literally felt something move through me that said, I'm supposed to be moving to L.A.
Wow.
And it just, I mean, it scared the hell out of me on the one hand, but the whole rest of the time I was in L.A. on that trip, I started investigating what did I need to do for my licensing. In other words, I went back to Florida after a week and told people I was moving to L.A. and I was going to be there in 6 months, and they all thought I was crazy.
Right, right.
And it was a risk, and
right.
it was one that paid off tremendously for me, and I was supposed to be here. I wouldn't be doing this radio show right now if I hadn't done that.
So that's a great example of following that intuition or that thing that you just were listening and did the work that was necessary, the exploration to find out what it was, and then made your move.
Right.
You know, had you found out things that didn't work or wouldn't work, you might not have made the move.
Mm-hmm.
But you were given that that spiritual guidance or that spiritual flash to motivate you into taking a look at that and all the parts fit.
And the odd thing is, it was not my MO previous to that. I was overly cautious. I was overly afraid. And that's why it was so out of character for me that when I did it, I actually felt so incredible and so energized about doing it.
Right, right.
You know, and I even got to L.A. without a job in hand yet.
That's, that's real powerful, real powerful.
Definitely. Now, you use the word spirit.
Yes.
We can't really, I mean, you know, on this show, I'm talking about holistic, which means balance and body, mind, and spirit. I know that you're a minister. I know that, you know, a huge part of your life is about teaching about the spiritual connection, dealing with who we are emotionally, mentally, psychologically. Some people get uncomfortable with that in the context of mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
But can you separate it?
Let me think a minute. I don't see how.
Right.
I don't see how it can be separated. It's even difficult to separate it on paper, you know, just writing about the two things. It's so intertwined. In fact, I think we're all intertwined. You know, the mind, body, spirit is all emotion. It's all intertwined. They're all connected in one way or another. It's like a gestalt. It's a fullness. And I don't know that you can actually separate it. Sometimes you can separate the parts to just in order to study or to look at it. But in reality, in a human, in a person, we're a total being. It's total, and everything is connected. You know, in the work that I do, in the Rolfing work that I do, it's that, you know, you can work on the ankle, it affects your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
You can work on different parts of the body, and it affects other parts of the body.
Right.
And so we're so interrelated that way that you can't disconnect it. All you can do is help bring it together, like in the body. That's what I do with the Rolfing, is help bring all the parts together.
And back to balance.
Yeah, so there's balance, and everything is working together again
in a
smooth, functional way.
Right. And again, what might be going on in the ankle as you're working with it may actually be connected to a memory and an emotional blockage.
You got it. You
so
got it.
As you're working on that ankle, and maybe the ankle is about moving forward and support. I mean, Louise Hay deals with a lot of the metaphysical connections, the different parts of the body, and the belief systems and the negative thoughts attached to them. So maybe the ankle is about support and moving forward. You're working on it, and all of a sudden, you know, fear of that going for something that they want started
coming up. And some of those emotions come up, and it comes from their history. I mean, it might be buried in their tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And as I work, the memory will come up of something that happened, you know, 20 years ago. that someone will remember, and then it's up to the consciousness then, and then they can kind of work with that if they choose to.
Definitely. Now, getting back to the spiritual issue, I mean, a lot of people listen to that and they hear the word religion in that, and I say on the show often, anybody who's been listening to this regularly know and understand that I truly separate religion and spirituality.
Yes.
You know, to me, religion is more of the earth plane form that some people express their spirituality in, but spirituality is something more personal to each one of us.
Exactly. Yeah, I always look at religion as people made.
Right.
You know, it's not innate. It's something that was made up by people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we usually adopt a religion of our family or something very early on when we don't have the intellect really to make those choices. And many people never change. Many people never look at why they believe the way they do in religion. And when they do, sometimes they move away from their birth religion and move into something else that they feel more aligned with, or really get into their own spirituality without religion.
Yeah, and I think in today's world, there's a lot of people looking and questioning religion and their judgments of other religions or people who don't share their faith or religion.
Right.
And we see the chaos, you know.
Exactly.
That judgment.
Look at the bombings in London. You know, I mean, the whole the war against terrorism is kind of on that same issue. You know, it's people operating out of I don't know what they operate.
Yeah. You know, I mean, even we don't even have to look that far away. I mean, even in his own country, so much of the separation is caused, I believe, you know, by people having so little tolerance and understanding of how other people live and believe.
Exactly.
And, you know, don't allow it. Now, you use, on page 164 in your book, you talk about faith.
Uh-huh.
To me, this is probably one of the more important aspects of what we're talking about. If you're talking about trusting your intuition, and you write, I want to read this, a few sentences here. Faith is the perceiving power of the mind and is our insight, our ability to see our thoughts. Charles Fillmore, co-founder of the Unity Movement, defined faith as the perceiving power of the mind linked with the ability to shape substance. Faith is our inner vision, our intuition to trust. It is our own computer software. None of this can really happen without faith. You know, faith from a spiritual perspective, or faith even from a mental perspective, trust. If people are uncomfortable with the word faith because there's too much spiritual connotation, they're uncomfortable, call it trust. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, we can call that trust, it's tricky. It's tricky. If we have faith, then we can perceive that which comes to us in a way that's positive or a way that isn't going to work for us. But if we have faith in the good, if we have faith that that life is good, that we are going to perceive and we are going to receive those ideas and perceptions that will work for us, then we can try them. Then we can experience following that incident or following that idea. And if it's a win for us, and if we're listening really carefully and we're following that, then we develop the trust in our faith. It's like a double-edged I don't want to say a double-edged sword, but it's like double-edged here, that one feeds into the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pure faith may not work in our lives. It may not be, because we don't know what we're hearing, what's coming through to us. It could be ego coming through to us, wanting certain things. So we have to learn to have faith in ourselves, and that comes from learning to trust ourselves and learning to believe in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get that intuition, we develop our faith in what's coming through to us.
Does,
I don't know if I said that too clearly.
I get it clearly. And
you were following me.
Well, too, yes.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the difference between having faith and not taking action.
Exactly.
Based on that, just is not going to work. It's that old parable about the warnings that, you know, this guy gets that there's a flood coming and the water starts rising and a bus comes to take him. He says, "No, I have faith that my God will save me." And
then
the boat
comes
along and he's higher up in the house. He says, "No, I don't need to join you. I have faith that God will save me." And he's now on the roof and a helicopter comes by and say, "You know, let us save you." He said, "No, I have faith that my Lord will save me." And he drowns and he goes to heaven. And he says to St. Peter, "You know, what happened? I thought, you know, God was going to save me." And St. Peter says, "Well, we sent you a bus. We sent you a boat. We sent you a helicopter. What else could I do?"
Exactly.
You know, so faith without action is just not going to do it.
If faith without action isn't going to, you have to put wings on those thoughts. Wings on them. Yeah.
Definitely.
Right.
We have roughly about 10 minutes left. I want to give you some time. I know you have a website, which is halmilton.com.
Uh-huh.
Just spelled as it sounds.
Right.
Very simple. Your book, Wising Up, Life Without Regrets, can be purchased via that site, and I'm assuming on Amazon and other places.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookstores.
Okay.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit more about what people will find on your website and what other things they can avail themselves with you.
Well, the website is pretty general, but it talks about both of my books. I had my first book was going public, A Practical Guide to Developing Personal Charisma, and they'll find a little summary of that book also, and Wising Up. They'll find the work that we do. My wife and I are both ministers and Rolfers, and so it will describe the work we do. We have our own ministry called Inside Out Ministries, and we do weddings, weddings, funerals,
you do workshops too.
Workshops, speaking engagements, and things like that. And so they can find all of that on our website. And what else? It's pretty general, but it goes into detail of the different things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And also how to get in touch with us,
you know,
with our email and so forth.
Right. And I also remind people every week that if you didn't have time to write down any of this information about Hal Milton or his book, Wising Up, Life Without Regrets, you can reach him via the website for the show, tellthetruthfaster.com. And his show, the last show he was on with me was May 21st, I believe. That show is already archived on my website. You can listen to what we talked about then. And this show will be up in a few weeks, and you can send a friend to listen to it if you felt it was valuable. And you can actually get a link to email him directly or email him through me on tellthetruthfaster.com. So if we have a few minutes and you have some closing thoughts or something you really want to make sure you leave people with in relationship to finding the wise one in us all.
Well, there's a couple things. I would like folks to realize that we don't, if they haven't already, we don't automatically get wise by growing old. We really do have to do the inner work. And it is a process. It can start at any time in our lives. I wish younger people would start the process early on. And it is a process. And the book really outlines the process. There's little guides at the end of every chapter that people can choose to do, and it spells it out very, very clearly of the steps to go along to do that. Because I think that it's not only our lives that we're attempting to save, so to speak. We're attempting to pass on our knowledge, our wisdom, to the generation behind us. And we need to know how to do that, because once we are gone, the wisdom that we've gained from our experience and our reflections are gone. And so it's responsible, and it's a great feeling to pass on what we know.
So it's not just about saving our lives, it's really about saving the world by
saving
our lives.
Exactly. And I also think that particularly for the older people, is that in the book there's a whole section on what we can do to make it easier on the people behind us, like creating wills and trusts and making lists of where things are, what your PIN numbers are, and your where your keys are, and the combination of safes and bank accounts and things like that, so the people behind you aren't in a struggle to try to figure things out, and they'll really appreciate your thoughtfulness of that regard. And also it gives us peace of mind when we have everything taken care of that
right.
way.
Which is basically what I said about my sponsor and
exactly.
the notary services that Rainbow Mobile Notary yes. Services offer,
yes.
which is really taking care of estate planning and durable power of attorneys and all that stuff that brings peace to the loved ones as well as peace of mind to yourself.
Exactly.
When you have that in order.
Right.
Now, you said something also. Was there anything else you wanted to close with?
Well, I would close. I have created like 10 little steps, and I could go over that briefly, like 10, like a little list for living life without regrets.
Good.
And they can pick it up from your. It's giving clear communication, talking to the person that you're afraid to talk to. Forgive yourself for the choices you made earlier in your life. Let yourself off the hook and forgive yourself for things you feel guilt about, either for something you've wronged, done someone wrong, or someone wronged you. And also call them, tell the people you love them, and like that. Practice acceptance of others and yourself. And this all comes about in the process of doing this work. But participate in activities that are fun, not just what you should do. And taking care of business, what I just talked about, a letter to those left behind, telling them where things are, and cultivate an inner life. That's the spiritual life that I talk about. Take up meditation or prayer. Go to a church or check out another spiritual group. You know, don't get stuck in one thing. Explore and be honest with yourself. And then serve. Find an organization or a cause that you want to volunteer for and serve, and give to the community, sharing your wisdom. So much will be gained, so much you will gain. And trust what you know, just what we've talked about,
right.
You know, trusting. And if you're conscious and if you're becoming more conscious, that trust is going to be stronger and stronger within you or within us.
Great. That's wonderful. I want to add one thing to that, which is also in your book, is keep a sense of humor.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Which I really feel is valuable. All this stuff we talk about, even on this show, is all such serious stuff. And,
exactly.
You know, have a sense of humor, even when what you're trying to do doesn't work out the way you thought it was. You know,
exactly.
Don't be so heavy on yourself. Lighten up and have a good laugh about it.
Yeah.
You know, so important.
I do that continually. I'll find out, I'll recognize something, and I just laugh at the way I did something.
Uh-huh.
Because it's so crazy. You know, I know better, and I do it, and I laugh at it.
Just one more short verse I want to read from the book, because I know we just have a minute or two left, and it's on page 171, and it really goes with the theme of the show. Telling the truth and keeping our word, no matter how trivial that may seem, is probably one of the most important things we can do. In doing so, we eventually discover that we have built self-respect and confidence, as well as having built our credibility with others.
Absolutely.
And
you know, Stuart, that's going to what we tell ourselves, too, that so many people will say, I'm going on a diet, and then they'll eat a chocolate cake and ice cream or something, and the inside self doesn't believe you. So the more you keep your word even to yourself or make a new agreement or negotiate something different, you lose that self-respect if you don't keep your own word to yourself.
Definitely. Well, Hal, I want to thank you for taking the time again to being on the show, and hopefully we'll do it again in the future. I've enjoyed both times having you here, and the dialogue is incredible. I think the approach you take And I really recommend your book to people because it is profound and simple at the same time, and I think most things that are profound are simple. And so thank you so much for the book, for the conversation, and for your wisdom.
Thank you, Stuart. That's very kind.
Good. And I thank all of you for listening. This is Stuart Altschuler on Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix. Be back next week, and thanks for listening.
That I heard of once in a lifetime.